Hello, and welcome to episode number 81 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. When people are first introduced to the enigmatic topic known as the UFO phenomenon, the working assumption is that this is a matter of determining whether or not aliens, i.e. extraterrestrials from some extrasolar source, have traversed the immense distances of outer space to arrive at our blue pearl of a planet, either to A, from a more positive view, study us, as in a scientific expedition, or B, from a less positive view, scope out our capabilities prior to some kind of invasion. Perhaps it should not be surprising that this is where the conversation begins for people, including those who flocked to this topic since 2017, when the revelations of a now famous New York Times article first entered the public sphere, suggesting to many that, despite decades of scoff and ridicule and X-Files jokes, perhaps there really was a there. Speaking of decades of scoff and ridicule, the decades leading up to the present one filled people's minds with the very scenarios I just mentioned, that either these visitors from beyond are here as part of a scientific expedition, as in Star Trek, or as a prelude to a full-on invasion of our planet, as in War of the Worlds or Independence Day. These are familiar tropes in science fiction, and so it should not surprise us that this has worked its way into our cultural zeitgeist. But those initial, rather tame and predictable questions about what the so-called UFO phenomenon represents are quickly supplanted by much more profound, far-reaching, and for some, disturbing questions once newcomers really begin to start poking around and considering the plethora of reports made by credible witnesses going back decades and decades, and perhaps even millennia, discussing in-person encounters with the intelligences supposedly responsible for the piloting of these sophisticated aerial vehicles known as UFOs or UAP. Because, as I just mentioned, these encounters trace back deep into human history, and likely even prehistory, one could argue that these more recent sci-fi encounters are really in the same overarching category as what we might deem religious encounters from yestermillennia, the questions around what this all means suddenly become much more broadly sweeping and all-encompassing. Without doubt, our religious traditions have shaped the development of our civilization and even of our collective consciousness. And if the encounters that inspired those very traditions didn't actually involve gods or angels or demons after all, at least not as they are typically portrayed, interpreted, and understood in religious traditions, then perhaps this phenomenon and the intelligences that comprise it has been much more intimately involved with our evolution than we first realized. And if that's the case, then we're suddenly a long way from merely Star Trek or Independence Day territory. Eventually, if one traces this back far enough, especially in light of more recent revelations suggesting these overarching intelligences can tweak our genetics and even partake in hybridization programs that lead to the emergence of entirely new species, one inevitably lands at a very striking query. Could our very existence on this planet be a result of some earlier version of these same endeavors? And if that's the case, how do popularly held beliefs in notions such as reincarnation play into this? Is that a natural process, or is something more akin to what we might call technology involved? These truly are not just mind-bending, but also civilization-shaking matters to consider. And one wonders, if we truly are nearing some kind of so-called disclosure around the existence of this phenomenon, then just how many of these startling revelations might be part of that mix? And how exactly will our civilization handle such acknowledgments? Tricky, nuanced matters to parse out, to be sure. But that's precisely what we'll endeavor to do in this, the 81st episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. I'd like to begin this week's podcast with a couple of announcements. First of all, I'm happy to say that I will be speaking at the Ohio UFO Heritage Conference at the Hope Hotel at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That conference is coming up on May 5th and 6th, and I'm one of the speakers in addition to people like James Fox, Diana Walsh-Pasulka, Bryce Sabol, Michael Masters, Micah Hanks, Kelly Chase, J. Christopher King, Phil Ford, and J.F. Martell. So quite the group of people speaking at this conference. There's both a main conference and a consciousness symposium. I'm part of the consciousness symposium, which will not be surprising to you on this podcast, knowing that that is a major topic we touch on over and over again. And really, I believe it is central not only to this topic of the UFO phenomenon and general paranormality, but about reality itself, ultimately. So I hope to see some of you there. That would be great. The conference is, again, the Ohio UFO Heritage Conference at the Hope Hotel at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, in the lion's den, as you might say. Again, the conference happens on May 5th and 6th, and you can either attend in person or you can take it in as a virtual conference as well. You can get tickets for either one of those options. Again, hope to see some of you there. That's in May in Ohio. The second announcement I want to make is that I am kicking up the features I offer for patrons and supporters of this podcast. Generally speaking, I'm just going to be offering a lot more content. So I hope that some of you will join in some of that further endeavoring by becoming patrons and supporters of this podcast. And just to give you some ideas of what kind of things are coming. Number one, I'm going to be offering additional feature series. So I announced recently that there's going to be the first of these series coming up soon, which will be on the raw material, the raw contact material, teaching the law of one. That's been a commonly requested topic for me to discuss. So what I'm going to do is an entire feature series just on the raw material, and that will be for patrons and supporters. I will also be offering courses and retreats as part of what I'm going to be offering in the future, and patrons and supporters get both discounts and early entrance to those kinds of things. Finally, I also plan to develop an app that will hold all of this together in an easy-to-access kind of way. As I've mentioned a couple of times previously, my background is also in software engineering, so I'm going to use those skills along with these topics that I'm really interested in and that I know that you are interested in to put it all together in one place so it's easy to access. A couple of other features to mention, patrons and supporters also have access to my private Discord server, where we discuss these kinds of topics ongoingly through the week. So you have access to that as well. And of course, you also get access to OTC Squared, which stands for Off the Cuff and On the Cusp, which is a podcast that happens in between POC sometimes, every few weeks, that has to do with current events, both going on publicly, what's going on for me privately. I also do a Q&A section of that podcast. And then finally, hot takes on things that are happening right now. So those are all features and offerings that are part of what I offer for patrons and supporters. If you're interested in that, then you can go to patreon.com/exoacademian. All right, let's get into today's topic. I titled today's episode, A Matrix of Myth and Magic, Exploring the Alien Seeding and Oversight of Civilizations. That's what we'll be discussing. It's a lot to get into. Let's first dive in with this notion of disclosure and what actually is entailed in disclosure. Now, for those of you who've been tuning in for quite a while, this will not be new to you, but I just want to reiterate this because some people are joining later, some people have come in fairly recently, so I want to take some time to just discuss this. Now, someone with only a cursory understanding of this topic might think that disclosure is about recognizing and acknowledging that alien species are here, that perhaps alien beings have flown craft, perhaps via some form of supraliminal, that is faster than speed of light, technology to arrive at our blue pearl of a planet, perhaps, as I said in the introduction, as part of some scientific expedition, or perhaps in a more nefarious sense, perhaps to prepare for some sort of invasion. At least that's the usual tropes we hear about. So some people think, well, so far they haven't done anything to us, so perhaps they're just here observing. And if that's the case, many people will say, why not acknowledge this? Why is this such a big deal? Why would that be something that the secret keepers would want to hold tight to their vests? Is it about, for instance, recovered technology, reverse engineering of some of these craft that have crashed or been recovered? Yes, perhaps, but that's not really all this is about. This is much more far-reaching than that. And that's what we want to get into today. This is not just about UFOs and aliens, as in ETs, coming here as part of some recent phenomenon, for instance, only since around 1947. It stretches back far beyond that, so far into prehistory, indeed, that we eventually arrive at this question: could our very presence, our very existence as a species, be as a result of some endeavor by these others? And perhaps they appear in different forms, or we perceive them in different forms, or we apply them to different categories as our culture evolves, but really it's the same phenomenon over time. Now, I want to discuss some of Jacques Vallée's work here, because for those of you not familiar, which I'm guessing there's not too many of you, because he's one of the most well-known UFO researchers in history, and definitely was someone who broke new ground for everyone, raised the bar, and made us think in deeper and broader ways, which we all benefit from. But what he noticed was that this is not a recent phenomenon, and the reason he determined that is because when you look at more historic, deeper historic kind of encounters with things like fairies and even religious figures in deep history, there's actually a lot of overlap between the nature of those encounters and more recent encounters, especially once you get beyond the sort of superficial layer, which again might partly be interpretation, and it may even be something that they're able to manipulate in order to work with our current cultural milieu. This is something Jacques Vallée said in Passport to Mogonia. Quote, "Today there are still students of the phenomenon who reject the notion that the UFO phenomenon was reported before 1947, unquote. A second quote from the same book, Passport to Mogonia, quote, "One prominent writer would allow old cases dating back some 200 years, but not before, because a long-term alien presence would negate the newest belief in an imminent extraterrestrial invasion manifested through abductions aboard flying craft," unquote. So again, there a really important point to make note of here, and this is something Vallée was great about noticing, is that people often enter the fray with a pre-existing notion of what this is, a pre-existing belief, basically. This is dogma at this point, and they would go as far as to exclude data that wouldn't support that hypothesis. But that's not how you do science. That's not how we really get to the bottom of this. We have to put aside our preconceptions, our favorite notions, and look at as much of the data as we can, and then determine perhaps what's going on. But you want the broadest lens possible, and that's something that Vallée really has demonstrated in his approach to this entire matter. Now I want to cut to the chase in terms of what Vallée really concludes in Passport to Mogonia, which is subtitled From Folklore to Flying Saucers. This quote gets at what he ultimately determined and what he thinks actually in the scope that we should be considering here. In that book, he concluded, quote, "Let us come to the point now. It would be nice to hold on to the common belief that the UFOs are craft from a superior space civilization, because this is a hypothesis science fiction has made widely acceptable, and because we are not altogether unprepared, scientifically and even perhaps militarily, to deal with such visitors. Unfortunately, however, the theory that flying saucers are material objects from outer space manned by a race originating on some other planet is not a complete answer. However strong the current belief in saucers from space, it cannot be stronger than the Celtic belief in the elves and the fairies, or the medieval belief in Lutens, or the fear throughout the Christian lands in the first centuries of our era of demons and satyrs and fauns. Certainly it cannot be stronger than the faith that inspired the writers of the Bible, a faith rooted in daily experiences with angelic visitation," unquote. So he really lays it out there, saying that we can't be too narrow focused here. We have to widen the scope, as I said, widen the lens, open the aperture, whatever metaphor you prefer, and look at our entire history. And beware of how at certain times we attach to certain narratives, and then we notice certain phenomena in our environment and assign those phenomena to these pre-existing notions or narratives. But these narratives shift over time. So perhaps it's not that these things are different or that there are different things that we're experiencing, but rather perhaps it's the same thing, the same phenomena, but we are simply slotting in to the most recent narrative. That's one possibility. Another possibility, of course, is that these others, whatever they represent, are able to be aware of our narratives of a particular era and are playing into those narratives so as to perhaps even shift or move or evolve our consciousness. That's really what Vallée gets into in another of his books, titled The Invisible College, as he goes about defining what he has called a control system. Now, regarding this control system theory, Fallais broke it down into three different categories, or three different levels. The first level is the physical level, and this speaks to the physical effects we would notice in our physical environment, what we perceive as physical reality, involving things such as a great deal of energy, light, and microwave pulses emitted in a small space, that kind of thing. Next, he spoke to the dual nature of the impact on individuals, which was both physical and psychological. So this could include things like the effects on witnesses in a close encounter involving things like disorientation or misperceived time, or what we often call missing time. Effects on the skin, like burns or conjunctivitis or temporary blindness, those kinds of things. But also positive things, such as accelerated healing of fractures and superficial wounds. And I would add, sometimes the full-on healing of diseases that seemed incurable. That's part of a physical and psychological level that impacts individuals who have close encounters. Third is the social level, and this really speaks to the control system in its greatest extent. This is the effect on our culture, on our civilization. At this level, according to Fallais, it doesn't really matter if UFOs themselves exist or not, because if enough people believe in an event and a narrative, then the effects are just as real as they need to be. In other words, all you need is belief, because that changes behavior. Now, of course, even if this is in play, this kind of large sociological shaping or evolutionary management of our species, that still begs the question, who's doing it? What's behind it? Certainly, it could be some sort of extraterrestrial or interdimensional intelligence, or perhaps it could even be the manifestation of the deep unconscious, the deep collective unconscious, almost the way that Jung might have imagined it. These are the possibilities, but this is what's in play within Jacques Fallais' control system theory. And just to be clear again, the main point here is that the phenomena themselves are not really what we should focus on. Those can change and do change, and Fallais is kind of making the argument that when you look at the entire scope of human history, we do see the phenomena changing in terms of what they look like at the most superficial level. But underlyingly, perhaps it's the same mechanism which is ultimately geared towards evolving our consciousness, shaping the very development of our entire civilization. So this is the promised land, you might call it, that Jacques Fallais delivered us unto, and we should be thankful to him for it. He took us from really considering whether or not these were just ET aliens here visiting us in spacecraft, to much deeper questions around the very nature of our existence, the very nature of our beginning, and consequently, where this might all be headed. Now, we already discussed the possibility that this could either be generated by some sort of extraterrestrial or interdimensional species, or it could perhaps even be some sort of life force itself, or the collective unconscious of humanity somehow manifesting these things as part of our evolution. You could even argue those two could fit together, that this alien intelligence, whatever it is, whatever its ultimate form is, could actually seed our collective consciousness in such a way that at certain points this would arise. So there could be some overlap there. But I want to focus on this notion of another kind of intelligence, another kind of species, life form, actually being responsible for our beginning, the very seeding of our civilization. This will tie in with other topics we've discussed on this podcast in recent episodes. First thing I want to point out to you is that statistically, it makes a lot more sense to me that we actually would be the product of some sort of seeding by some other kind of life form. And the reason I say that is because when you look at the vast differences in the ages of different galaxies, star systems, and whatnot across the vast expanse of the cosmos, there are some really big differences. Some galaxies have been around for a lot longer than others. Even the outer arm of a galaxy is much newer than the inner center of a galaxy. And we already know that we are on the outer arm of the Milky Way galaxy, so we're a much newer planet and therefore civilization than some civilizations that might have formed closer to the center of the galaxy. And to be clear here, we're not talking about a difference in terms of a few hundred years or a few thousand years or even a few hundred thousand years. We're talking about millions or even billions of years difference in terms of the age of these civilizations. Now, we just think back to our own civilization in the last 100 years, how we've gone from horse and buggies to actually having spacecraft now that have left our solar system altogether. really there has been a massive leap in technological progress in just 100 years. So imagine what 1,000 years or 100,000 years or millions of years would do in terms of the development of a civilization, its technological progress. Really, when you think about it, you quickly end up with a null space, a blank slate, because we just can't think that far ahead. We have a hard time imagining what our world will be like in 100 years even, let alone thousands of years or millions of years. At that point, it's completely beyond our imagination, basically. So that being the case, knowing that it's very likely based on the sheer size of the cosmos and just how many galaxies and star systems there are, numbers that really boggle the mind because they're so huge, just the sheer immensity of the cosmos and the myriad numbers of galaxies and star systems populating it, lead us to believe that even if life only springs up on the minority of planets, that there still should be life teeming throughout the cosmos, and that some of that life, some of those civilizations, will be much older than us. And what do civilizations do as they develop? Well, they tend to expand. They tend to start playing with the very ingredients of life itself. Look at what we're doing with genetic manipulation. Look what we do with puppies and dogs that we want to look a certain way. We breed them in certain ways. We manipulate the growth of different vegetables so that it suits our needs. We shape our entire environment to our needs, and even in terms of expressing our curiosity, we try new experiments with life and life forms. And that scales up more and more to the point where we're now considering putting brain chips in to actually augment, so to speak, our intellectual capacities, right? This is something that Elon Musk has talked about. In addition, of course, to Elon Musk being ready to take us to Mars. And we'll get to that in a little bit and why that might be problematic to some of these overarching intelligences based on the current state of our civilization. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we already see in our own development that we move towards these things. What might we get up to in another 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years or millions of years? It's not hard to imagine that we would actually go about terraforming planets and actually planting new civilizations and even playing with the notion of developing new species of intelligent life. So when you think about all these matters, the statistics I just mentioned, it should actually be more likely, from my point of view, that we sprung up through a mechanism like that than by some sheer fluke of the randomness that would be described in something like the theory of evolution by natural selection. I also want to point out another mistake I notice us making very often in our species. We don't really consider how different the categories even become, the category of possibilities as we progress. So even groups like SETI and different private groups even looking for so-called alien life are still going in with certain assumptions that I think are far too narrow. And really these assumptions come down to us assuming we're close to the summit of understanding not only about space-time and the nature of the cosmos, but the nature of ultimate reality altogether. And because we feel like we're close to that summit, we assume that if we find life or we even look for it, we should look for it within certain parameters. But again, the assumption here, the unstated assumption, the preconception, is that we're close to a summit understanding, so therefore they must fit in somewhere within the general parameters of what we understand. But of course, that is a highly suspect conclusion to draw. It's a highly suspect condition in which to conduct these experiments and to conduct these searches. So much so that I actually believe that most of the time we're actually conducting what are called category errors or category mistakes, which is defined like this. A category error is the error of assigning to something a quality or action that can properly be assigned to things only of another category. For example, treating abstract concepts as though they had a physical location, unquote. So what I see happening here is this assumption that our notion of space-time is mostly complete. Our notion of the nature of reality is mostly complete. Our notion of the understanding of how species evolve is mostly complete. And because we believe all those things, we look to find evidence of these others within that general framework. And that's where we go wrong. And I would suggest to you that the fact that this phenomenon so often exceeds those parameters and basically laughs at them in the way that it manifests, right? It just makes us feel as if something absurd is happening. Speaks not to the fact that it's ultimately absurd, but that our expectation that it should fit within those parameters is what is absurd. And so we perceive it as absurdity. And of course, beyond that, even when we think about dimensional layers of reality, it has been noted before that when a higher dimensional form actually manifests in a lower dimensional form or projects into a lower dimensional matrix, it's going to appear absurd because it gets translated, mistranslated, truncated into a framework that is not able to adequately, realistically represent that higher dimensional reality. And so it ends up looking absurd because of that mistranslation, that truncating of something more complex. And all that is to say, like Vallée, I welcome the opportunity for us to do some quote-unquote good science, as he liked to say. We should, in fact, endeavor to apply the scientific method to this phenomenon to understand as much as we can. We should bring in academics from a variety of disciplines to make this a multidisciplinary kind of research endeavor. Absolutely, we should do that. But we should also recognize that what this phenomenon has already demonstrated, even in how Vallée likes to say, what the UFO phenomenon teaches us is that we do not understand space-time, full stop, is that what is in play here is a scientific revolution. And I think we have to be honest with researchers who are coming in that that's really what's in play. Now, they may at first balk at that notion. They might think we're silly, unscientific people. But actually, people who have a scientific background, who are the most familiar with this topic, people like Colm Kelleher, people who studied this at Skinwalker Ranch and saw how somehow strange paranormal phenomena co-arose with UFOs and things like that, and how you have things like Sasquatch and the appearance of what, for all intents and purposes, look like interdimensional portals appearing in the sky, as well as beings that seem to manifest from some other frame of space-time. All that speaks to this being about much more than what modern science, conventional science, is prepared to accept. So that's why I say really a scientific revolution of the highest order is in play here. And I think we should be honest about that as we move forward and actually get excited about it rather than actually feeling frustrated that our previous notions of what reality is are being contradicted and superseded. We should see that we are on the cusp, on the precipice of a real breakthrough in understanding that perhaps could even help us solve some of the problems we are currently encountering. Because as Einstein famously said, we cannot solve our problems with the same level of thinking that created them. We are certainly at the cusp of some major issues in our society, in our civilization, potentially civilization ending, civilization collapsing kinds of challenges. So we need this kind of revolution, and not a revolution just in terms of scientific understanding, but hopefully one that embraces the underlying and overarching significance and primacy of consciousness. And not just local consciousness, not just the consciousness of a single individual that feels separate from everything else, but an understanding of consciousness in terms of seeing that we are all connected, that we are all actually fractal impressions of source, ultimate source, not only us, but also these alien beings we are encountering, and that this new understanding of connectivity, of how everything impacts everything else, will actually help us move forward in a way that actually is more sustainable and one that honors the nobility of the human spirit and the nobility of every sentient form of life in the cosmos. Now, I already mentioned that I think we need to be prepared for a scientific revolution of the highest order based on what is being presented by this phenomenon, the data being presented by it, the criteria, and what that points towards. I would also point out that even data we've already obtained is pointing towards a very different structure to reality than we've been accustomed to and that we'd like to build our models from. So for instance, I've discussed how revelations arising from quantum experiments 100 years ago still haven't really been grappled with by scientists. In fact, I would suggest that we've gone out of our way as a scientific community and as a civilization, in the West anyway, to basically just avoid this data. We tried to walk around it like it's a giant thing, the proverbial pink elephant sitting in the middle of a trail, and we've tried to go around the elephant as if to pretend it's not really there. In other words, we're not really dealing with the data. We're just proposing more and more outlandish sub-theories to explain how it might not be what we think it is, rather than dealing with the fact that it's actually there and it's saying something about the inadequacy of our models. It's blowing up our models and to such a degree that scientists don't really want to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with it because it uproots so much, especially as it pertains to this notion that physicalism actually depicts ultimate reality. As I've said many times on this podcast, I don't think it does. And it's not just my belief. There's actually mounting data, really convincing data suggesting that physicalism is not even tenable as a model anymore. So we really need to be using this phenomenon, the data coming from it, to embrace the fact that this is actually steering us in a direction to answer some of the questions that are already being begged by other data that we've already come across and that we've had for at least 100 years. And again, I would suggest that this data points towards consciousness being primary, not physical reality. We think back to, for instance, the double slit experiment. Prior to this kind of experiment, we just assumed that reality just was, regardless of who was observing it. But really, that notion goes out the door as a result of the findings in the double slit experiment. The implication being that what we perceive as physical reality is actually not only influenced by, but perhaps derived by consciousness itself. That's what we see with some of those experiments. And I'll just remind you of what Niels Bohr, one of the early quantum physicists, said about the revelations of quantum mechanics. He said, quote, "If quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet." And that's really key. If you're not shocked by it, you have not understood just how far-reaching the implications are, how it effectively rips out the ground from underneath us, and we find ourselves hanging in midair, not even knowing what that air is composed of, but picking up on inklings suggesting that that stuff that is all around us is actually derivative of something we might call consciousness, some sort of mentation process that has as much to do with our feeling of being us as it has to do with the things that manifest around us and what we perceive as a physical reality. But again, the key here is that that physical reality is not independent of us and other agents of consciousness. In fact, it's the very opposite. Its existence, physical reality's existence, is actually impacted by and determined by consciousness itself. And just to be clear there, because this gets a bit confusing for people, because consciousness, that term is used in many different ways, what we're ultimately pointing towards here is source, the original mind that gave birth to everything, every entity, every physical structure, or what appears as a physical structure, all of the interrelationships in reality are ultimately mentation processes, and we ourselves, therefore, again, are fractal impressions of that original mind, as are all of these alien beings in our midst. Another metaphor that might be helpful is that of a diamond. So rather than considering ourselves as separate diamonds, we are actually different facets of the same diamond. And because light hits those different angles and reflects a different reality, a different experience, it can appear like it is separate, but ultimately is the same thing. It's the same diamond, the same ultimate source, but the different refractions of light are what we can consider our personal experiences. But again, that individuality is ultimately illusory. We actually are connected to this source. We are this source, as is every other sentient being. And for that matter, every other supposed inanimate object is also part of this central diamond, source itself. So if we take as a given, as a presupposition, and every model begins with some presuppositions, if we begin with the notion that consciousness is fundamental, is primary, and from that underlying bedrock, everything else that appears as, for instance, physical reality or energy is actually a manifestation of that deeper structure, we can also apply that to these others. Again, with the notion that perhaps they've been around for millions of years longer than us, how would their understanding of reality have developed? It would not just have developed in terms of greater technology, in terms of manipulating the physical world, but because really the physical world is a manifestation, a derivative of some deeper structure based in consciousness, then it's logical to assume that eventually they would begin to develop technology that would work on that level, at the level of that deeper structure. And I would suggest that we actually see that in the way that they're able to manipulate and control our behavior, our emotions, our sense of space-time. All of these things indicate that some deeper manipulation of reality is going on, and a deeper structure beyond space-time altogether. Now, because we're talking about a deeper structure of reality, from which this becomes a derivative form. So both quantum theory and space-time, the physical world as we perceive it, are actually byproducts of this deeper structure and what's happening there. Then we can also think about that in terms of what we consider life. In other words, what we consider the process of birth, maturation, and death are actually, again, not what they appear to be. We already see this evidenced in reincarnation studies and in near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, where people have experiences and memories that seem to violate our notions of a life existing as an individual iteration and then being wiped out. What we actually see evidence of is some deeper level of reality from which this lifetime is just one manifestation of many, and that it points to some deeper structure that makes the notion of biological life being a thing unto itself also partial and ultimately illusory. Now, let's bring this back around to the notion that perhaps our civilization was seeded by one of these other older intelligences that are now working at the level of this deeper structure beyond physical reality, beyond space-time. We already know from the literature that hybridization programs and genetic tweaking are happening. This is something that's central to the UFO phenomenon data. So from there, it's not at all a stretch, really, to consider that our very existence here is due to some sort of process that they put into place, or at least that they handled or oversaw or managed at some point along the process. Because again, if this is about a deeper process and a deeper structure of reality, then again, our understanding even of where life begins and ends is faulty. But nevertheless, we certainly can consider it as a possibility, even perhaps a likelihood, based on what I said before about statistics and different ages of civilizations likely, then it's not at all a stretch to imagine that they did seed our civilization. And we already see evidence of hybridization programs, genetic tweaking. We already have evidence suggesting that there was a major leap in the capacity of hominids at some point in history that seems to defy the normal pace of how evolution would roll out. So all of those things are pointing towards this possibility that we were seeded by some of these others. There's another piece that I want to bring to your attention, and it has to do with the crash retrievals we mentioned earlier. Again, people tend to think that means aliens from Alpha Centauri or Zeta Reticuli, but it's much more complex than that, because as the story goes, one of the most startling, perhaps the most startling implication of the Roswell crash and retrieval, not just of craft, but also of bodies, if you remember, was that there was actually a DNA link between us and them. Yes, indeed, some sort of genetic common ground. And again, if we think about our largest scope here, bringing in also religious history, we think about scriptural texts that talk about being made in the image of some other being, some creator, right? Or what we perceive as a creator. So that perhaps could link in here in the sense that we actually share some of their genetic heritage, that they are actually hybridizing themselves perhaps in some distant point in history. And again, what I would suggest to you there is not that we therefore limit our understanding that perhaps we are actually hybridized or mutated gray aliens, but that they themselves are also a further iteration of some earlier form, again, of source, of an expression of source, of sentience that goes back to source. So even when these species somewhere along the way are able to manage the evolution of consciousness and the development of consciousness, at least at some point along the journey, it ultimately is about this deeper structure of reality where consciousness is primary. In other words, they themselves are already iterations, impressions of that original mind, and that just keeps getting passed down. And that eventually perhaps even we too will seed civilizations that has some aspect of us, which of course relates back to that original mind, that original source. This is key. Somehow this notion of God is central to all of this, if you will, if you can get rid of the religious baggage. But what we see in religious history is the retaining of some sort of memory of some sort of intervention by some group that has been in religious history referred to as an assembly of the gods or some sort of divine council. Again, based on an earlier iteration of our consciousness, that's how we saw them. But what if it's just these others at a certain point along the trajectory of their consciousness development now overseeing the further development of consciousness in new iterations, which represent us, but they themselves also were the product of some earlier source of the same kind of process. And this goes on and on. And this is ultimately source expressing itself, source understanding itself. So you see, from my point of view, this really ties in with Buddhist and Vedantic thought about original mind, about source, about the notion of individuality and separation ultimately being illusory. And so I think we need to tie in those things, because what I see is that all of this is pointing in the same direction, the manifestation of the phenomena in our midst, revelations that are arising in space-time experiments and quantum theory, suggesting that space-time cannot be fundamental. There must be some deeper structure, as well as this overarching experience sense that so many human beings have,
that we are more than we've been told that we are,
that we even have identities that go back to previous lifetimes, even previous forms, and some sense that underlyingly, overarchingly, we are absolutely connected to everyone and everything. Now, finally, in conclusion, because we pointed to consciousness being so central to this entire endeavor, not just the UFO phenomenon, but reality itself, and that underlyingly what we mean by consciousness is iterations of source, original mind, there's something else we can take from this that I think should give us encouragement, and that is that the most powerful of these others would be closer to source. They, in their development, as they learn to wield the technology even of consciousness, they are also moving closer and closer to an understanding and alignment with the purpose and the perspective of source itself. And what does that produce? It produces an ever-expanding sense of care and concern, an ever-expanding sense of identity, that they see us, like I've said before, as little brothers and sisters. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't iterations of source in the form of some sort of alien intelligence that perhaps is not at that point. And there certainly are groups that seem to want to manipulate, dominate, suppress, take advantage of, just like human beings do at a certain stage of consciousness. But what we can take away is that the most benevolent ones are also the most powerful, the most exalted ones, the ones closest to source. And in fact, I would suggest to you that's exactly why we have not been invaded by some of the more nefarious groups, because we are protected by the most overarching and benevolent and powerful and exultant of these groups. And that what is really in play here is the consideration of the best interests of every sentient being that's part of this process. That means not just us, but the animal species, the earth itself. All of these factors come into play when this overarching kind of council that's referred to in scripture and has also been referred to in the UFO phenomenon as the Galactic Federation, for instance, their purpose is to manage all of that, to act in the best interest of the totality, because they see that as an extension of them, an extension of source. And in that sense, regardless of what happens, they are considering not just the best interests of all of those agents, but all of those agents expressed across multiple lifetimes. So in the end, this is about the greatest good. That's what I would suggest to you. Even though we have moments, even periods, even epochs of real struggle, of real challenge, and even physical existence itself with all of the red tooth and claw challenges we face here, is actually also just one iteration in a spectrum of consciousness development. And as we keep progressing along that spiral of consciousness development, we too one day have the opportunity to ascend, to transcend to some post-biological form where we don't face some of the challenges we do now. But this is one aspect along the journey, one stopping point where we have to learn certain lessons. This is kind of a kindergarten class, if you will. Is it early? Is it primitive? Yes. Is it necessary? Absolutely. And ultimately, because we too are source, we have the opportunity to ascend and transcend to that alignment with ultimate source. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.